immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
The white zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the red zone.
The red zone is for immediate loading and unloading of passengers only. There is no stopping in the white zone.
No, the white zone is for loading and unloading, and there is no stopping in the red zone.
The red zone has always been for loading and unloading. There's never stopping in a white zone.
Don't tell me which zone is for stopping and which zone is for loading.
Listen, Betty, don't start up with your white zone shit again.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, fresh in from a flight. Thankfully, it was a really good flight.
Yes.
Yeah. No food poisoning?
No food poisoning. It was a dog, but I don't know why they didn't keep him in the kennel, and then it shat in the middle of the aisle. It was the whole thing.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
That is a bad thing.
But where do you walk a dog on a plane?
Just smell for 3 hours.
Well, that's the problem with the owner. They should have picked up that poop.
And that's how we're starting this episode. Sam Stepanenko, everybody.
Hello, good afternoon, morning, evening, you know, the rich.
Yeah.
Trish Coughlin.
This is Trish. Over.
Under. Roger. Vector.
Roger. Victor.
Today we're talking about Zero Hour from 1957, directed by Hall Bartlett, and he also did the screenplay along with John C. Champion, and it was based on a teleplay by Arthur Haley called Flight into Danger.
For the CBC.
Yes. Which is probably why there was so much Canadian content in a U.S.-produced film.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why.
They didn't change the script.
No.
Not much. They just basically abbreviated it for feature length.
Oh, where's Winnipeg?
Yeah, Winnipeg, Regina. They even name drop Lethbridge at one point.
Yes,
I'm like,
I
don't think I've ever even heard that.
I love that
in
that
the movie.
First hub is Calgary.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we are, Calgary.
Exactly.
But yeah. Nobody's ever going to find that movie.
It was hard to find.
It was.
But it was worth the effort to find it. I really enjoyed it.
So did I. I finished it and I'm like, fuck. Went on Amazon. Ooh, I can't afford that. Like,
yeah.
That the last version of the DVD has been long out of press, so.
So it's getting pricey.
Yeah. I think it was like $100 to $1,000. I'm like, yeah, I don't want it that bad.
No. Yeah. Unless you're planning to do what they did with Airplane and make a version of it.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the other movie we're talking about today is Airplane. Screenplay and directed by Jim Abrahams, David Zucker, and Jerry Zucker, who also fought very hard to get three directors on one movie.
And thank God.
Yes.
Because the Directors Guild wasn't going to have any of that.
Yeah. They get really pissy about stuff.
They do. And who cares? So what? So they get three directors. They have to split the fee.
Yeah, that's what I can't quite understand. Sort of like, if they agree to it, I don't
what's
quite see the problem.
Wrong? Yeah, it's what's up with that? And yeah, you're right. It's like,
if you're pressured by a studio, I see why they get pissy about it. But if the directors themselves are fighting to do it,
yeah,
I don't see a problem.
No, not at all.
Especially if you legitimately have three directors.
Yeah. They're a team.
And these three, I'm just going to call them Zaz.
Yeah.
There we go.
Zazz.
Zazz.
I like that. They had went and bought the rights to Zero Hour, and Paramount was happy to sell this obscure movie for next to nothing, apparently. It was like
$2,500.
Yeah, somewhere around there. It was like nothing. Budget of the original film in 1957 was $4,764. $4,764,000. That's it. Less, not even $500,000. And the budget of the remake, I'm not going to call it a remake. It's heavily inspired by, to the point of ripping off.
It's the, what they should have done with Psycho.
Which is why they bought the movie.
Yeah.
So they could do this. It was budgeted at $3.5 million, and it grossed, just in the U.S., $83.4 million. So it's a big success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is considered a classic, classic comedy,
for
right?
1980. So. Yeah, and it was the beginning of a new farce trend that I think they tried to kick off with Kentucky Fried Movie, but that wasn't the success that Airplane was.
No.
Well, Kentucky Fried Movie is prior to this.
It is.
So, and actually, I was listening to the commentary on this because I bought the DVD. I love this movie. And they were talking about how some people didn't even want to be involved because they were the Kentucky Fried Movie guys.
Yeah, and that was a big trick. And when they were casting that movie, they were going for all of these actors that were known as straight, very serious, almost monotone, like these guys who did crime movies and things like that. We'll get to that cast in a
bit,
because great cast. I think that dry delivery that these guys did and were famous for really works for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in one case, started a whole new career.
Yes,
oh, hell
it did.
Yeah.
But the original movie, Zero Hour from 1957, it starred, well, nobody that had a huge career, but
no.
Dana Andrews, Linda Darnell, Sterling Hayden, Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch, that's important, it'll come up later, and Jeffrey Toon. Yeah, Crazy Legs, he was a football, CFL football player. Was the captain in the airplane.
He was the co-pilot.
He's the co-pilot, yeah. He actually had Captain Sparks. He's credited as the captain, but he's the co-pilot on the original plane. And in Airplane, they cast Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in a similar role. He was a basketball player as the co-pilot. So just trying to... They really tried to stick with some of the formula from this one.
Oh, they did. And I mean, to a certain extent, disagree with you about it not being a remake, because it is plot, dialogue.
Plot. A lot of dialogue is lifted straight from the original script.
That, we'll talk about that in a bit, because there's something that I noticed while I was rewatching it. I'm like, wait a minute. But yeah, it's a remake that they've added to it. They've made changes to it to make it a unique film. But it's the same plot, same character, same character names.
But they didn't lift everything. Like, the only character they lifted from this is Ted Stryker.
Yeah.
He's the only one. I mean, there's character structures for sure.
Yeah.
There's also homages to spoofing another Airplane movie called Airport.
Yeah.
Yes.
From 1970. And
also written by Arthur Haley.
And there's a few other spoofs along the way that were of popular movies that were a little more in the consciousness at the time. But those were probably the two main places that they were ripping from. But very much Zero Hour.
Yes. It's lifted from that, like Psycho was. But like, if they were to do... Remember when they did the shot for shot of Psycho? Mm-hmm. This is what they should have done. Just remade Psycho, but like added to it.
Oh, by the way, that was also our Psycho episode.
Yeah.
If anybody's wondering why we haven't covered it, same movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, literally, same movie.
Yeah, there's no difference. Yeah. But they lift a lot of stuff. But for the names,
there's
the characters
difference.
Are there. There's a difference. The characters are different because actually...
One's in color.
One's in color. But a lot of the character names, a lot of the guys, they've used names of people they knew. Like guys from high school and they're like next door neighbors. So they changed some names.
Yeah, The Zazz brothers, guys they knew growing up. And that's what they were doing, was naming them after people they knew. And in fact, if you watch Kentucky Fried Movie, there are character name carryovers. So,
and this over.
Yes, that was a good clip.
Sorry, I'm really going to harp on that. I'll apologize.
Now, Zero Hour, This is first time I'd seen it. I've seen Airplane many, many times. Mm. And I'm not sure if maybe seeing Airplane colored my view of watching Zero Hour. But, man, I love Zero Hour because it's hilarious in its sincerity. Like,
it really is.
It's an older movie, and it's so overdramatic, and I can see how easily that push over the edge to farcical comedy. A little tonal shift and bang, there you go.
Yeah.
And I did find it quite funny.
So as did I had some actual laugh out loud moments, especially when I recognized a scene and went, I remember where that was in Airplane.
And what they did.
And what they did and how they kind of took it and put it over the top, right?
Yeah. Oh, the panicking passenger. Yes. I love the panicking passenger.
Yes. Yes. That was one of my laugh out loud moments. And the drunk Scottish guy, I'm like, that's the two black guys who are speaking in...
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Scottish football fan.
Yeah.
He was talking about Argonauts and stuff. I can see why this movie didn't resonate. Nobody in the U.S. knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Where's Winnipeg? What's an Argonaut?
Calgary? What's a Calgary?
Yeah, especially in 1957, right?
Yeah, we were 30 years away from the Olympics yet.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have known. But there's the one, too, where she's asking if they had the fish. She's like, oh, yeah, no, me and my wife both did. We both had the fish. And then she sort of looks away worried. But in the real Airplane, the stewardess does this whole big, oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, her eyes get really wide and she bites her fist. She's like, yeah.
It's also, and you're like, it's exactly the same, but just a smudge changes the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, even though I read factoids, I knew this beforehand from another British comedy that I was listening to, a radio program called Cabin Pressure.
Yes.
Pilots are not allowed to eat the same thing for this very reason.
Mm-hmm.
If one gets sick, the other won't, unless both of them suck. And I would have been worried about when my choices are meat and fish. What's the meat? Well, meat.
Yeah.
At least in Airplane, they fixed that. It's steak and fish.
Well, in the original, they were offering lamb, and they initially said the choice was lamb or halibut.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So it was, but and then they got lazy and said meat or fish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Meat and fish is just what stuck with me.
Well, I think it's at that point they're thinking of it like where you have meat, fish, chicken. Like you kind of
food
meat.
Groups.
Yeah. It's sort of, I think that's where it went meat and fish, they're considered two different things.
Yeah. I actually found that actually quite humorous when they switched over and she says, yeah, he had the halibut and he had the meat. It's like, okay, so now it's just meat. You're right. It's,
yeah.
That's where I was getting more worried. I'm like, oh no, they're all going to die.
Yeah. It's kind of like spam. It's not really food, but it's still technically meat.
Spam. Yeah.
Salisbury
spam,
steak.
Spam.
Which isn't, I don't know. If you ever have like a TV dinner.
Oh, yeah. Anything a TV dinner? Yeah.
That's unnamed
quote,
meat.
Unquote, meat.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, the mashed meat, Salisbury steak. And I don't know. There were no Salisburys in any of my Salisbury steaks.
No.
I don't know. What plant does a Salisbury grow on?
Well, I think maybe it was Salisbury.
Yeah, we're gonna be playing with words all podcast.
Yeah. Made from real Salisbury steak, England. Like, there's some really grotty looking cows that look like they've been through some shit.
These are the Vietnam or the World War II vet.
It's like the opposite of cows. Kobe beef.
Yeah.
It's just had a hard life.
It's pre-ground. As soon as they're butchered, as soon as they're killed, like, they just fall apart in the ground meat.
Steaks are made from cows hit by large trucks.
Yeah. Or just like they've been addicted to meth. A lot of stuff has gone bad for them. The poor cows.
Oh boy, this podcast. I picked the wrong week to give up bath salts. I'm going to run the trailer for Zero Hour. We're going to collect ourselves.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. And we're going to get right back into this.
Shirley, you must be joking.
Don't call me Shirley.
I'm not joking, and don't call me Shirley.
Put yourself in this man's place. Aboard a transcontinental plane, suddenly half the passengers, including your own son, are struck by a paralyzing deadly illness. And then in the midst of the panic and confusion, the stewardess tells you to come forward to the pilot's compartment. This is what you find. A pilotless plane running wild in a stormy sky.
Can you fly this airplane and land it?
No, not a chance.
You're the only chance we've got.
How could he fly a plane again after the horrible experience that had sapped his courage and ruined his life? But only he among all the passengers had any chance at all to save them, even though it was one in a thousand.
This is Cross Canada Charter, flight 714, in distress. Come in, anyone.
I want you to get on a horn and talk this guy down. You'll have to talk him onto the approach. And so help me, you'll have to talk him right down to the ground.
Captain, he's below 700 now and he's still going down.
Speaker, you can't come straight in. You've got enough fuel left for 2 hours flying. You've got to stay up there till we get a break in the weather.
Listen, Trelevin, I'm coming in. Do you hear me? I'm coming in right now.
In front of him, the bewildering array of instruments that blur before his frantic eyes. Beside him, the woman who had once loved him. And behind him, a plane load of frantic passengers.
Ted, we're falling, Ted, we're falling!
Back to work, dickhead.
damn it, this podcast is going down. We have no autopilot.
Oh, Otto. He got credit.
Yes, he did.
I like the way they called him autopilot instead of...
Yeah. O-T-T-O. Yeah. Otto. Yep. Making his film debut.
Yeah, and then he starts driving buses on the...
I am sad to say that Otto has met his demise... He disintegrated in one of the Zucker's garages.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He'd just been poorly taken care of, dried up, and fell apart.
That's what happens to pilots.
Yeah. Rode hard, put away wet.
In this case, probably very literally.
Yeah.
I'm still wondering how he had that. At the end of the movie when he... took the plane off again. I'm like, yeah. Didn't he have any wheels? How did he get that off the ground?
I don't know. Well, maybe he was filled with helium.
Yeah.
And it was all Otto.
Movies. So during that trailer, we were talking about this guy who is engaged to the stewardess. Yeah. And he was entertaining Ted Stryker's son, Joey, who... okay. Yeah. Anyway, he was entertaining the son and distracting him with this little hand puppet.
It's a sock puppet. It's a fucking sock puppet.
It was a glove.
It was a glove. Sorry, yes.
It's a glove.
With yarn on the top for hair.
Yeah, and it's got eyes on the side like you would do that face and the jaw with your thumb.
Hello, I'm quite
home. And then you'd stick the thumb out with the... It was sad. And I saw that and I'm like, yeah, I think she's about to cut off the engagement. And it had the craziest voiceover, which I adored because it was so obvious.
Yeah.
And I thought it was probably that Scottish football fan because it had a very Scottish...
Really? It was supposed to be Irish, I think. It was Paddy.
Maybe? Oh, yeah. It was Paddy. It was Irish. Yeah. So, I don't know. The Irish lilt to it is hilarious. Now, Ted Stryker, Lieutenant Ted Stryker, he is a veteran from World War II. And he lost his squadron when they came in too low. They actually did a valiant fight. With very little losses. And then coming in with the fog, that's where most of their losses happened. Is they came in too low to land and just... crashed right into the ground.
Because they wanted to hit the major target that needed to be taken out rather than a softer one that would have been easier with less fog.
And Stryker was the one who made the decision to come in low and take, and he's got PTSD. Right?
Yeah.
What we now identify as PTSD.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, flashbacks galore!
Almost too many.
This also plays...
Which is where the humor comes from.
Yeah. This plays over in their airplane as well. It's a very similar backstory. I have no idea what war it was.
Yeah, they just call it The War.
War. But being 1980, I'm guessing Vietnam?
No, I think
it didn't.
The comedy is just a war.
Yeah, just to say
it's stationed in Drambuie, okay? Yeah. So it's not a real war. It's a made up for film.
Yes, and I love when he's in the club and in a military uniform, and it's a Navy uniform. It's not. Yeah. It's not an Air Force uniform.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know
because you can't disco in a regular army uniform.
No, because silly. It's already white. Yeah. So, you know, this is, yeah, disco.
Yes, they made sacrifices for the joke.
Yep.
Oh, boy, did they ever.
Yeah, so he's, and it's the difference in the original is that it's his estranged wife and his son on this flight rather than just his ex.
Well, he's been hopping from job to job ever since. He'd gone through 12, I think they said.
Mm-hmm. In 10 years,
He'd have been applying for a new job, and it sounds like he got it. He was going to go home to celebrate, bought some champagne, and there's like a Dear John note.
Yeah.
And the wife had taken the kid.
And it strangely sounds like
they were going to leave and not come back.
But yeah, but what's weird is I think this one job, when he's in the interview, he's finally trying to get past it. And this seems like this is the one job where he might be taking more responsibility and kind of finally getting past this, which is just like the timing was terrible. He was
Sounded like it was a flight job or something.
It's something to do with planes. Yeah. It's funny because that's that dialogue from that
exactly
was wholeheartedly pulled out and reused by Elaine in the remake.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So sometimes, they reassign the dialogue to people, but a lot of that dialogue, that's a good example of where the
dialogue... Well, it meshed in with some of the other dialogue.
Yeah.
When they finally meet at the airport, there's that whole line about, well, I can't be with you if I can't respect you.
Yeah. And Elaine said that in the original movie as well. Except she was on the plane already when that happened.
Yes. Yeah. That happened in the hallway on the way to the plane.
Yeah, yeah. The major difference is that Ted Stryker in the comedy hasn't gotten past it, everything, and it takes this to get him past it. But in the original, he finally kind of is, and he's not. He's totally a reluctant hero the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I love an airplane where every time he recounts his tale, it ends in suicidal tendencies. The one lady who aged into a skeleton during the story and...
Lady who hangs herself.
Hangs herself. There's the Japanese guy who commits seppuku.
Isn't it Harry Carey?
Harry Carey. Sure.
And then the guy who tries to set himself on fire.
Yes.
Who's rescued by the...
Was rescued, but it goes up anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. they apparently paid $25 for that effect. Because the guy was dousing himself in water. Just fun fact.
Where would they buy their water? Or was it just the gas canteen?
The gas contained water.
The gas canteen is what cost them $25?
The little tiny explosion effect.
Oh, that was $25.
They're like, that's what they spent. Yeah, it's $25 for that little effect.
Okay. I thought that included the budget of the canteen.
No.
The gas can cost... so much money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, go to Canadian
I think
Tire.
That's why these movies, like these spoof movies, kind of took off in the 80s for a while, is because they're fairly inexpensive to make. Like, looking shitty is part of the humor.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like, you use what you have around.
Yeah. Like that car drive with Rex Kramer, and then it's all in front of the green screen, and the green screen, he runs over somebody, and then later on he's being chased by cowboys and Indians.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm like, what is going on?
And it's like he's going along this winding road, but he's not moving the wheel.
Yeah, I love that scene.
Yeah, and then the plane itself is just a thing, a model on two strings, and they've just put like the imagery around it.
Yeah, and they were shameless about it. They're like, at no point are you supposed to believe that this is real.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so Ted Stryker, he was the only one that actually moves in. Ellen is replaced by Elaine.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen was his wife. Yeah. And
so close.
Elaine was Elaine Dickinson in the other movie, who was a stewardess, and they weren't together, no kid. And they reassigned Joey to another couple. But
For all that... you know, kind of child molestation humor.
Which, I'd forgotten about this. I'm so uncomfortable.
It's so raunchy even now. Like,
yeah.
Well, it was even worse before. I was doing some reading, and one of the lines that they changed and just cut, and thank God it was just a little too on the nose.
Yeah.
Hey, Joey, you ever seen a grown man's cock?
Yes.
Yeah, cut that.
Yep.
Cut that. That's a little too much.
Yeah. Well, that
whole
scene,
They did. Have you ever seen a grown man naked? That was in the movie.
That was in the movie, yeah.
Lots of... Yeah.
You ever seen a Gladiator movie?
Captain Clarence Over, played by Peter Graves, may have been a pedophile.
Yep.
Yeah, and that wouldn't play today.
No.
There's no way you can see that.
But I see where they got it from. Like, yeah. In Zero Hour, when Joey's brought up for the tour of the cockpit, he's given the toy plane, just like Airplane. Yeah. The captain, which was Captain Martin Trill. No, that was not him. Oh, I'm getting all the names mixed up. I'm not sure what the captain's name was. Bill Wilson, maybe?
Maybe. I think it might have been Wilson.
Trevelyan was the one on the ground helping them.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh Joey
first,
can stay up here.
Yeah, the first officer is Walt Stewart and Captain Bill Wilson. So, yeah. And he kind of grabs him in and kind of pulls him in on his lap, and Joey's looking a little uncomfortable.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. No,
please let me go. Yeah. And this isn't a serious movie.
I don't know you that well.
Yeah, I can see where they pulled that from.
Oh, like, yeah,
let's just read into this situation, because I saw it.
Yeah, no, there's no question where they, like, why they sort of went in that direction. But yeah, it's just, like I said, it just wouldn't play today. There's no way.
No.
You forgive it because it's made in 1980.
Yeah. But it's sort of, it could work today if people were aware of the original content, because you could kind of be like, no, we're making fun of this bit because it's very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no,
but people didn't know that at the time.
That's exactly right. And I mean, Zucker Brothers aren't afraid to do uncomfortable humor too, right? It's like, that's funny, but it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a few other instances of that in this movie, but certainly that was the most noticeable.
Yeah. Well, Airplane, every now and again, there's something the Zuckers put in there, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't think it got it in 1980, and it didn't get it today either.
Yeah, so. there's a couple times. Like I said, I was listening to commentary.
The watermelon
that
falls from nowhere for no reason. And I know they were complaining, oh, we were disappointed the audience didn't get a chuckle out of that. And,
yeah.
But why? It's like it's so non sequitur that we're just scratching our heads going, what just happened?
I think sometimes like some of the jokes are just for them.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, well, the first sick lady in Airplane that starts coughing up the eggs. I didn't. It's funny, but I don't quite get it at the same time.
No, it's like magic. I don't know what was happening there.
Yeah, and she still had more to give.
Yeah,
that was the funny thing. Before the end of the scene, you can see another one waiting to come out.
Yeah, well, that's the whole joke. You pull them out, and like it's like they both have an egg, and that's how you keep going.
It's trying to figure out sort of what it was supposed to represent. I was trying to analyze it, forgetting that you're not supposed to analyze these movies.
No.
I mean, every now and again, there'd be a reference to something, and later on, I didn't know all the references when I was a kid. I think this Airplane was. I went to a double feature. It was my first time going to a drive-in.
Nice.
So it was Going Ape and with Ted Danza.
There we go.
And then Airplane. So
that sounds
probably
that's
something I shouldn't have seen at that age.
So no,
I didn't get a lot of the references because they reference older movies and older television and the singing nun part.
Yeah, they have the singing nun, and the woman who talks jive is Barbara Billingsley from Leave It to Beaver.
Yeah,
which I wouldn't have known when I first saw it when I was a kid.
I'd probably seen her a few times. I seem to remember making the connection at one point on the rewatch. I didn't. I'd kind of forgotten about. I'd seen a couple episodes of Leave It to Beaver, and
I knew
it had
name.
Revivals in the '80s. So
yeah,
yeah.
And I think didn't they have like the Beaver had like a small revival show where he's grown up too?
Yeah, he did.
Actually, fun fact: I think in one of the things where this wasn't supposed to be a movie, it was just supposed to be a sketch. It was Wally and the Beaver trying to land a plane.
Yeah.
In one iteration.
Yeah, well, actually, Airplane itself was supposed to be a movie within a movie. It was actually intended to be the movie inside of Kentucky Fried Movie 2, which never happened. So they just expanded it into the movie that we got.
Yeah, which is great.
I mean, a lot of happy accidents got that movie made. In fact, they completely lied about the pitch on the movie because... Kentucky, if you would have said we want to make Kentucky Fried Movie on a plane, nobody would have made it. So they pitched it as Animal House on a plane, and everybody was on board.
Yeah, you just have to know what to say.
They said a raucous comedy on a plane.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's what you get.
It is. It's just not Animal House.
It is definitely not Animal House.
But there is bits of... It's Animal House-esque, and there's some parts that are completely outside the movie that don't even fit, but they're just fun.
Yeah.
Because Animal House has a bunch of those.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, yeah. So back to Zero Hour.
Yes. I know. We don't want to talk about the original, but
well,
we're
trying. Well, we do. We're dancing around because they do have kind of the same plot, so...
Yeah. But, ooh, they're going different directions. That's the one big difference.
It's, and you hit one of the things that I noticed in the dialogue where they wholly ripped off a chunk of dialogue from the control room, mm-hmm. right, about how they had to get past the mountains and before they could even think about landing. They were already past the mountains in airplane when that happened because they were headed east. They were past the Rockies because they were over Nevada.
Right. Yep.
And there are no more mountains between Nevada and Chicago.
Nope.
Right.
So that made it funnier to me because
and modern the 80s radar should have been able to pick them up.
Yes.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I actually found that funnier because I then sort of realized that they literally had just stuck the dialogue from the original movie in there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't even try to change it to make it work.
No.
And so it made it funny to me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, then they said check the radar, and he opens up the microwave oven.
Yeah.
Uncooked chicken in there.
And he said 2 minutes, and I'm like, that chicken needs a lot more. Yeah.
And I had to do some research on it, and I guess radar was the name of the first home microwave. That was a long way to get a joke. I've seen that so many times, I'm going, I don't get that one.
See, some of the jokes don't age. The only joke I got from that moment is the guy from Breaking Bad who opened the microwave. He's one of the major characters. One of the most beloved.
Mike. It was Mike. I forgot. Yes,
that's where my humor came from that moment. Not even the chicken.
That was Jonathan Banks.
Yep.
He was Gunderson.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I totally forgot about that. There's a lot of little cameos like that.
A lot of them. Sandy Duncan.
Yeah, yep. Sandy Duncan. Oh, the guy who was wiping the window.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
Oh, Jimmy Walker?
Jimmy Walker, yes. Jimmy Walker. No lines, but he was another big 80s TV guy.
He got a line. It was, oh!
Yeah. Right after he checks the oil.
Ethel Merman, it was also her last movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, she died 4 years later.
Yeah.
But she was great, though.
Right? She was great. Yeah. She could only do an afternoon shoot because it took all morning for her hair to set. Mm-hmm.
Oh, she...
She brought her own stylist. And, yeah, I mean, Ethel Merman's completely out of the public consciousness now, but she had bulletproof hair.
You'll be swell. You'll be great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, she's a big Broadway star known for her singing. But, most people wouldn't get that now.
No.
But the Zazz really loved it. They're like, she was a lovely woman. It was amazing. They were so happy to have her.
And it was, I mean, a good honor for, sort of parodying herself, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And I love actors who are totally not afraid to sort of not take themselves seriously and make jokes about themselves. Because, I mean, she's playing a guy who thought he was her. That's the best part, right?
And that's the thing. Can you imagine that if you were had a psychotic break where you thought you were somebody else, but it was that good?
Yeah. I have a new career.
Although I think that might be the plot Elvis? Of Split.
That would explain all the Elvis sightings.
Yeah, there we go. Right? People think they're Elvis. Mm. But we lack a lot of Napoleons, so I'm not quite sure how well that's working for them.
Yeah.
Because that was a big joke. You think you're Napoleon.
The Napoleon complex has died down in recent years.
Yeah, it's a very 80s joke.
Yeah, it is very much an 80s joke, yeah. Let's bring it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, to get his family back, Ted Stryker buys a ticket for the plane to go wherever it's going.
And he hasn't been on a plane
since. In this case, it was Vancouver.
Got the Air Force, yeah.
10 years.
Yeah, this case, yeah. And so this was a big step in and of itself.
Yeah.
So, when people start getting sick, and is anybody can fly a plane back there? Nope.
Oh, no. It's somebody who can fly a plane and didn't have the fish.
You're right.
In both movies, they specify that.
Yeah.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's run that clip.
No thanks. I think you ought to know what our chances are. The life of everybody aboard depends on just one thing. Finding someone back there who not only can fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner.
I think you ought to know what our chances are. The life of everyone on board depends upon just one thing. Finding someone back there who can not only fly this plane, but who didn't have fish for dinner.
Straight from the movie, it's all about delivery.
It really is.
Like, you'd be amazed what a subtle change from tragedy and comedy are very too much two sides of the same coin.
Oh, I love that. Love it.
I love that they used the dialogue from the original movie. When they did use it, they used it very intelligently, because it all played very well into Airplane. It either fed the humor or highlighted the humor, because it was, again, so over the top. Because Zero Hour is an over the top drama. Like, the acting is like stage acting rather than film acting.
Yeah.
I mean, and you saw that a lot of that in the 50s.
That was in general with older films, because they were, acting was a stage performance.
Yeah.
So people didn't know how to tone it down. So being over dramatic to really sell to that audience, you don't have to do that as much on film. It's all in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So there, it is really over dramatic. And that's also part of what makes it really charming.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And it, you I keep thinking of the moment where Stryker and, well, Elaine / Ellen are talking. She's like, it just seems that when the sun came up, it was coming up another day just for us. And like, it's in both movies verbatim almost. Well, except for the one part where Elaine says, I'd sit on your face and wiggle. But they just added that line.
There's a little bit adding.
But the rest of it is exact.
Yeah. And I love how in Airplane, they kind of capture that overacting, the overdramatic acting too. Because Julie Haggerty doesn't act like that in most of her other movies.
Oh, no. She's great.
She's a great actress, and she's very natural usually. But she played that sort of wispy ingenue, like, over the top. And it worked really well.
Airplane was her first feature film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, she did a great job. She just personified it.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, and Robert Hayes, same thing. I mean, he's a very very capable of natural acting, but he took that and went right over the top with it. And again, it added, just because it was an homage to the original film, obviously, but it also added to the comedy, is all this overacting. So they were playing it very deadpan, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah. Zaz, the Zucker brothers, had asked David Letterman, who's a good friend of theirs, to audition for that role. There's actually Letterman footage out there. He did run it later on his show. But he auditioned for it. And I could see him being okay with it, but he was very uncomfortable as an actor. And he never really wanted the part. But
I don't think David Letterman could have done it if the part was not Ted Stryker, but David Letterman.
Yeah.
I think
it would have been a very different kind of delivery.
He's one of those actors who's basically essentially himself all the time. There's no real difference. But Robert Hayes is really good.
Welcome back. Jim Abrams and Jerry Zucker and David Zucker are now with us, and we were discussing the motion picture Airplane, which made so much money, but you're now involved with another project. Is that correct?
Yes, but enough about us. We actually brought with us the screen test. The screen test of David Letterman.
Right.
For Airplane.
Yeah, now let me, just before... before we get into this, and I guess there's no way to prevent this, this is a bit of a film that I have not seen, and it was made when?
This is the usual disclaimer, I assume.
I have not seen this, and I had no real interest in seeing it. I guess it's obvious that I didn't get the part.
It was real close, though.
It was close, huh?
Yes. It was a photo finish. It was done in 1979.
Yeah. And this is me testing for this?
For the role.
Yes.
For the lead role in Airplane.
All right. And I guess we have that?
I guess that's here. And it's a big surprise.
Okay. I have not seen this. I'm not eager to see this.
We'll have fun.
Ted, we got a telegram this morning from headquarters.
Headquarters? What is it?
It's a big building where the officers meet. But that's not important right now. You taking all the blame for what happened on that raid was a pretty courageous thing to do.
Was it? Because of my mistake, 6 men didn't come back from that raid.
7. Lieutenant Zip died this morning. But Dr. Chandler says you'll be out in a week. Isn't that wonderful?
I wish I could say the same thing for George Zip.
Ted, be patient. No one expects you to get over this immediately. I found a wonderful little apartment for us. It has a brick fireplace and a cute little bedroom with mirrors on the ceiling.
Oh.
What's wrong with him?
It's Lieutenant Hurwitz, severe shell shock. He thinks he's Ethel Merman.
You'll be swell. You'll be great. You're gonna have the whole world.
You know, maybe if I'd have gotten the part, that movie would have made some money. All right, enough of that nonsense.
But fun fact, do you want to know who else they auditioned? Bruce Jenner.
Oh. Yeah, those jokes write themselves.
I know. It was interesting. You learned a lot in the commentary.
I did not know that one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm already writing, like, the jokes are just kind of like flooding into my head there. Most of them are not appropriate to say in public.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know, there'd be some joke about Elaine going, I don't respect you and you always steal my shoes.
Yeah. Or, well, here's the weird thing, I think the other reason he probably didn't get it is because Bruce Jenner's very noted in that, like, I think the two movies he's been in are both Razzie Award winners, so had he been in this one, that wouldn't have made any sense. Yeah, no, they saw a lot of people, but Robert Hayes is just, his little moments I love so much. Like, he's perfectly serious, but it's just, I don't know how he does it where I'm just busting a gut. Or
yeah,
because
so he can
sincere.
Do serious and hold on to that sincerity. I remember the Starman television series. It didn't last very long, uh-huh. But based on the film. And I remember really quite liking it, but I had some adjustment to make.
Yeah.
Because it was, I'd only known him from Airplane and Airplane 2. So, took a little getting used to.
Yeah. It's just seeing him in something a little more dramatic after seeing him in the Over the Top. But he's very dramatic in these movies. So it's, even when, like, he's doing the whole I Have a Drinking Problem thing, he's dead serious.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they were looking for. When they cast these parts, they were looking for serious actors,
mm-hmm.
who did serious parts. So when you get into the 1980, Robert Hayes comes from a more dramatic television background.
Yeah.
Didn't know much about Julie Haggerty, but this was her first feature film.
Yeah.
Leslie Nielsen hadn't done comedies yet.
No.
You know, Lloyd Bridges, he almost didn't do it because he didn't want that to stay in his career, which is, I'm glad he did, because he's so good at it. It was actually, we owe it to Jeff and Bo are the ones that convinced him to do it.
Yay, Jeff and Bo.
Yeah, he was really
thank you
with
guys.
The drug references and stuff like that, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he was really,
Peter Graves, I mean, so Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Robert Stack, the Untouchables.
Yeah.
He was pretty much the same guy.
Yes.
That was the great thing about it. He delivered his lines the same way he did on Untouchables.
And he delivered his lines, I mean, he even sounds like the guy from the original movie.
Yeah.
Like he looked a lot like him, and he sounds exactly like him, like that same.
I thought he was a little less angry.
Yeah. A little less angry, but but in terms of, like, timbre and tone of his voice.
Yeah.
It's like,
Right.
And they did that with a lot of the actors, too. Like, a lot of them either had a similar look or similar tone in their voice.
Yeah.
Right, like there were a lot of similarities. Like, these guys really must have really liked Zero Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you don't do something like this with a movie that you don't love.
I agree. I think they were the guys that long ago were us, when you're like, this movie could be great if you just fixed a few things and changed it a little.
You know how they found this movie?
Oh.
They were recording late night commercials to spoof.
Uh-huh.
And they had accidentally recorded this movie late at night, 2 a.m, called Zero Hour. That's how they found it.
Wow. Yeah. It's kind of spooky. Maybe a ghost decided it was time and they should know.
Yeah.
And I sort of, this is one thing I want to mention. I love how they have the Airplane actually took the exclamation point from Zero Hour and included it in their title.
Yeah, I know, right? I should have introduced it, Zero Hour exclamation point versus Airplane exclamation point. You know you're serious if there's an exclamation point.
Exactly.
He's like, I know our movie's called Zero Hour, but do you think people get that, like, it's really important that it's Zero Hour? I don't know, Dave. Maybe we should put an exclamation mark on it.
No bigger. No bigger.
No. If we're going to go too that big, just two. We have to do two the same size or one big.
No, no, get rid of that other dot. It looks like a giant penis. Now it looks like an exclamation point. What were you thinking?
I guess, too, when we're talking about how they cast it, Leslie Nielsen, I guess he was having trouble. Like, they were thinking, like, he was having a bit of a problem the first day. So they gave him the movie Zero Hour to take home and watch. And he's like, the next day he came back and he got it. Like, he nailed it from there on in because he saw the other performance and he knew what he had to do.
Yeah. And this was a big dip in his career. Like, the poor guy thought he was going to be stuck with grandpa roles for the rest of his life. And it changed everything. You know, he did that and then did the short-lived Police Squad TV series, but that led into the Naked Gun movies.
Yeah.
So, and he just was known as that comedy guy after that. It, like, people had actually forgotten about the serious part of his career.
Oh, for sure.
That's how much it resonated.
Yep.
It erased it. It was so iconic. It just erased everything.
And he was in a lot of good movies back then.
I know, right?
Yeah. Forbidden Planet.
Yeah.
Well, like, it's the same kind of, it's a Shatner-esque type of deal, whereas...
Who's in Airplane 2.
True. but with William Shatner, he did a lot of roles. Like, he's done Shakespeare, like, even before he did Star Trek, but because of Star Trek, that's it. It erased everything else he could have ever done.
Yeah.
And so did T.J. Hooker.
Oh, yeah.
For a short time, but I don't think it ever...
T.J. Hooker never overshadowed it.
Never overshadowed the Star Trek time.
But it gave him that brief respite from it for a little while.
It did, yeah. And, you know,
with Adrian Smedge just stealing his thunder.
I love finding stuff pre-Star Trek with him, because there's some really cool stuff. There's a couple Twilight Zone episodes. And,
the best Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
Well, one of the best. But.
Which we're not going to get into, because we're going to use that for an episode.
Oh, for sure.
Down the road. But it's coming. It's going to happen. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
If you want to know what we're talking about, go way back to our Zero episode. We talk about it there.
Yep.
Yeah. Way back.
Before Sam.
Before me.
Pre-Sam.
P.S.
Nice. We're gonna keep that.
P.S. and A.S.
P.S. P.S. and A.S. Piss and ass. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we're not keeping it anymore.
Damn it!
A good thing that you had to go and ruin it.
Sometimes, you know, just the short bit between my brain and my mouth just gets overridden and I can't stop.
It's okay. I don't know if Sam's ego could have taken the Jesus allegory.
No. Probably not. Although if you kept it pissing ass, then it'd probably keep me down a notch, right?
There we go.
Another line that they ran with from Zero Hour was the guy in the control room gets called in and... He does, I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Yes.
And boy, do they run with that ball in Airplane.
Yes, they do. It was awesome.
I loved it.
And again, that was Lloyd Bridges who was in that role. And it was great.
The escalation.
And the rule of three.
Yeah.
The rule of three plays very hard in Airplane. So he does the quit smoking, quit drinking, quit amphetamines. But they weren't done at three.
No.
No.
No. Wrong week to quit sniffing
and
glue.
Just everything.
Yeah. I love how Stryker in Airplane is a cab driver at the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
And he leaves his fare at the airport. He says it's going to be 5 minutes or whatever. But actually...
Gets on the plane.
Well, but he pulls the tab.
The
guy's paying for him to wait. I'm like, that's a dick move.
Yeah.
But he gets on the plane. And about halfway through the movie, we get to see him. He's still waiting.
$113.30, which is funny because it's hours into a flight. And from all of us knowing how much we pay for cabs now.
I thought it was like 11,000.
No, because I saw the dots in the middle and the 30 comes up.
Okay.
For 30 cents.
I guess I must have misread that. But cab would have been a lot cheaper in the 80s. So. Mm-hmm. Did you guys stick around after the credits?
Oh, God.
Oh, you didn't.
I've seen this so many times, and I have, but I can't remember what's there.
It's the guy. He's still sitting in the cab.
Yes.
He's like, okay, I'm only giving him 20 more minutes. Yeah. Now, was this Ferris Bueller? I think it is.
It is pre-Ferris Bueller. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there you go, because people like to credit Ferris Bueller for that post-credit thing. And I'm like, yeah, I was pretty sure they'd done this beforehand.
Yeah, Airplane's 81.
And Airplane does it beforehand.
At least 5 years prior.
Yep. There you go. bang.
Ha ha.
Myth debunked.
Yep.
Yeah. Eat it, internet. So, yeah, people are falling like flies to the fish virus.
Yeah. You know,
they had to add to the drama in Airplane with a sick child who needed a heart transplant, and that goes back to the Airport movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or series. Was it a series of movies, or was it a TV series? Well, or were they both?
There were a few disaster movies at the time. I think it's sort of just an homage to, like, just really ratcheting up the tension. It's like, yeah. It's not just that these people are sick and are going to die. This child will die.
Yeah. And that's where the singing nun stuff comes in. I love how the other stewardess, Randy, grabs the nun's guitar and starts singing. She's really good.
Oh, yeah.
She's kind of getting into it, but she's knocking chords out and...
Her IV.
And she's making the fish face. It was so terrible that it was funny, right?
Because at the very beginning of the movie...
A way to make the child feel better by murdering her.
Yeah. At the very beginning of the movie, they do say, it's like, you have to keep her calm and unstressed and in a constant IV. And that's exactly what they did. But when Randy gets the guitar and she's taking it up to the front, she bangs all those people on the head.
Bonk, bonk, bonk. Well, I think it's a good place to actually run the Airplane trailer, because we keep talking about it. Maybe we should let people catch up a little bit.
Yeah.
Or people could just hit pause and go watch the movie and come back. You know,
we recommend that.
Yeah, but you should have done that an hour ago.
You should have been doing that. You should have done it 10 times since you were a child.
At least.
It's a good movie.
Well, some people were born after this movie was made.
I know.
That doesn't mean they shouldn't have seen it at least once.
Well, I agree, yeah. But, you know, some people live closeted lives, and it's only on Netflix, and Netflix likes new stuff. They don't have put enough of these classics on there.
Well, just go into their parents' ancient DVD collection.
VHS. Come on. Well, I used to have this on VHS.
Yeah.
Once upon a time.
But if you're talking like they're like millennials, the DVDs are the old version.
Yes. Yeah. But you hipsters know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Stand by for the most extraordinary chain of events ever swept up into high adventure.
Hey, Larry, where's the forklift?
Forklift! It's over there where the bag is water.
Airplane. Airplane is drama.
This is Dr. Brody at the Mayo Clinic. There's a passenger on your Chicago flight 209, a little girl named Lisa Davis, en route to Minneapolis. She's scheduled for a heart transplant. I want you to make sure that she's kept in a reclined position and that a continuous watch is kept on her IV.
Airplane is action. Airplane is romance.
I love you, Elaine.
I love you.
Airplane is music.
There is only one river. There is only one sea.
Airplane is dancing. Never has the screen been so big.
You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Peter Graves.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
Leslie Nielsen.
This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Lloyd Bridges.
Johnny, what can you make out of this?
This? Oh, I can make a cap, or a brooch, or a pterodactyl.
Robert Stack.
All right, Steve, let's face a few facts.
And we hope you enjoy the rest of your flight.
Julie Haggerty.
By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
Can you fly this plane and land it?
Robert Hayes.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
I gotta get out of here.
Let me handle this. Calm down. I'll get back to your seat. I'll take care of this. Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Doug, do you want another phone? Everything's been torn to me.
Mayday! Mayday!
Positions. The most incredible adventure the screen has ever created.
It's coming right at us!
The big news is... Airplane.
Yeah, that was a good catch-up.
A bunch of things we just talked about.
Absolutely. So, back to Zero Hour.
Yes, we kind of get hung up on Airplane, don't we? But
we do.
But it's because everything that's in Airplane is in Zero Hour.
It is.
Yeah.
Except for the Canadian references in Toronto Argonauts.
Mm-hmm. And Vancouver. They talk about Vancouver a lot. We got to get to Vancouver.
But that's where all the movies are made now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, when there's another scene that is in both movies where the reporters show up and they're... Mm. prepping for the headline, and I had to laugh in Zero Hour when he's got both headlines ready to go either way, miraculous miracle save,
Yeah, 35 people die is the like something like airline tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, the Zuckers actually wanted to keep the movie a little closer to Zero Hour, a smaller two-prop plane, and this the producers wanted it more modern. They wanted, the jet engines, despite the fact that it sounds like props.
Yeah.
Well, I think they wanted to keep it kind of back in the time frame.
Well, the 707 was the most popular airplane at the time, so.
Yeah.
It might still be, to be honest, as a passenger plane.
I'm not sure. I don't know enough about it.
I mean, it was the predecessor to the 747, so.
I don't know. What do WestJet fly?
I don't know.
I don't know the planes themselves.
Is it why I look like a pilot?
No, maybe.
But did and I could be wrong. I mean, that's why I'm asking for verification. The scenes where Robert Hayes flashes back to his fight, are those the scenes from Zero Hour?
I think initially they are. They certainly look like the same clips to me. But a little later on, when the flashbacks get a little more ridiculous, they've got other stock footage of just the history of planes. Aeronautics.
Yes. Yeah, but that very first flashback, I was going,
some of
that
it, I think,
looks like it might be the Zero Hour footage.
It did look like Zero Hour footage.
I think
to
a
me.
Couple of clips are. Yeah. I don't think all of it is, but I'm pretty sure some of those clips are.
Yeah.
It would only make sense, right? Because they, had the rights to the film, so why not use it?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll use as much of it as they can until they're like, okay, no, now we got to get it funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Super funny.
No, it's, but yeah, it's watching, like, if you've seen Airplane at least once, probably more than once, if you watch Zero Hour, you can see, like,
every major scene is there.
Yeah. And you can see all of the, like, the direct scenes that they went, okay, this has a potential to be really funny if we just do this.
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff they clipped. I mean, the movies themselves, I think Airplane's 7 minutes longer.
Yeah.
There's the flashback scene again in that bar, and then it goes disco dancing. It's the one time in Airplane, and I think every time I've seen it, I've kind of noted that, but that scene goes on way too long.
It is, yeah.
Way too long. That's, I think, my only complaint. And they don't do flashbacks like that. It really is just the airplanes crashing and fighter footage.
It's all about the plane.
Yeah. Whereas you get a little more into Ted's personal life at that point and the traumas and what he did before and after. So before the accident, this is when he first meets Elaine.
Yeah.
And then post accident, they go to Africa and
they join the Peace Corps.
Yeah.
They join he's been in the army, he joins the Peace Corps.
Yeah. The VA hospital though is pretty, that one's pretty funny.
Yes.
He's painting. And somehow it's an army guy with a leg around his head holding a baby.
Yeah. And which is hilarious in and of itself. And then this guy off camera is like, hey, can I take a break? And there's a guy holding a baby with his leg behind his head.
A very flexible man.
In front of a back set.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's even got a background set. I'm like, I didn't know you could do that in a VA hospital.
You probably can't.
You probably can't.
That's the point of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they like you say, they lifted a lot. And I wrote a couple things that I just had to make note of. Because you know when they talk like, that's not important right now? And yeah, that's a big major through thing? Is that's his response when he tells the stewardess, which at the beginning of that is like going, yes, ma'am, what's your name? Janet. It's like, can you handle some hard truths, Janet? And that's the same thing, except Elaine says no. Janet's like, yeah, okay. And he's like, it's a bacterial infection. He's like, oh no. It's like, what's going on? He's like, that's not important right now, but we have to get to
it. And it happens again later in the movie when he's asking about the fuel mixture. The general says, that's not important right now.
Yeah. So like, you can see why they just like hung on to these little bits.
Yeah.
Oh, and one other bit, they're like, wait, he actually says in the original, it's a different kind of flying altogether. Which they grammatically correct in the remake.
So, when he says it, and it was Randy and the I think it's Dr. Baird.
Yeah.
Leslie Nielsen. Dr. Rumack in the remake. Baird in the original. So Dr. Rumack, and he says, all together, so that they just repeat the line together.
Yeah. It's an altogether different kind of flying. Different kind of flying altogether.
It's a different kind of flying.
Yes. There was one other moment there that I was going to bring up, and I forgot what it was. I'll come back to it.
Okay.
And one of the things that they did cut out that I'm glad they did, because it wouldn't be relevant in a modern film, is the relay system they were using to communicate with the other ground crews. Sure. That was a lot of screen time in the original movie.
It was, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So they that's where they got their – they pulled that out to put in their jokes and their homages to other movies. Because, that relaying – I'm like, this is getting really painful. That was probably the only part of the movie that where I kind of started to go, okay, I'm getting a little tired of this.
Yeah, there's just a lot of relaying, and then when they finally get over the mountains and then switch over to British Columbia, that's when they're like, okay, now we got to go find Trevelyan to help bring them down. I can think of only one man who could help us.
Yeah.
Because there are no other pilots around.
No. Well, I think it's because they know his history with Ted Stryker is really the point they make. They really make it an airplane, but I don't think they really say it in the original movie, but he is aware of who Ted Stryker is.
Yeah. No, they do say it. He says he actually says at one point, and this is a funny moment, actually, is he says, we can't let him know who he's talking to because I don't want our history to affect his to unnerve him. And then the first thing he fucking says is his name.
Yeah. Which is, and then in the remake they're like going, "Yeah, I hope he doesn't know how much I hate his guts." He says he hopes you don't know how much he hates your guts.
Yeah, so they kind of turned that on its ear, but that same animosity is kind of hinted at there, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not even hinted at in Airplane. He's out and out sad. But I found that particularly funny because he does say he can't know who he's talking to and then immediately identifies himself.
Oh, I know. Dude, come on.
You just said it.
Yeah. I don't know which war it was. No wonder that mission tanked if you were part of the people in charge.
And he had no faith in Stryker in Zero Hour, whatsoever. Yeah. Wasn't even going to try to build him up.
No, he does say he have to give him confidence, but he doesn't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, he thinks they're all dead. I love in the airplane, have them go fly them into the sea. At least maybe we can save some lives because they thought he's just going to crash into the city.
And in both movies, there is that guy who's like, he's a danger to everybody up in the air. They would be better off having somebody who doesn't know how to fly a plane.
Right.
And all they do in Airplane is add like, yeah, he's a danger to everybody. Yeah. Yeah. Including birds. That's all they changed. I'm like, yes, that is correct. That is a funny line.
Imagine how that would have changed Star Wars with Darth Vader coming back for the second Death Star.
Oh, yeah.
You really want him to build another one?
Yeah.
Really? Really?
He's a danger to everyone.
He's a danger to
including birds.
He's a danger to everyone, including birds.
But thanks to Rogue One, that's fucked that all up.
I know. Well, what's funny with Rogue One is I think even prior to that, we were discussing like the architect who made the Death Star.
That's right. If you guys listen to our back catalog, Probably in that Star Wars episode where we discuss not knowing about Rogue One and the plot of Rogue One at that point.
We talk about how the entire movie, how did this guy get work? Well, yeah. Now we know.
Now we know. I'm not sure if that was that episode or not, but yes, we do it. You might have to go through the entire back catalog to find it, but you can find it.
I don't know.
I'm not just saying that to make you listen to all our episodes.
I like to think...
When you find it, tell us.
Yeah.
I like to think the scriptwriters of Rogue One heard it and went with it.
I'll choose to believe that.
But yeah, no. I think the other thing they changed that I kind of enjoyed was that it without the son with food poisoning, because it's like both his parents are up in like the cockpit, and that I think that just was a weird dynamic.
Yeah.
So like having him just be part of another family was a little bit better.
Yeah, I like the other two children. And they really like were proper grown-ups. Yeah. This kid comes in and up to this little girl and brings her coffee and. He's like, oh, would you like to sit down? It's all very proper, like it's two adults.
Yeah. And then this really horrific line. I love it.
Oh, I don't. Oh, God. I'm blanking. Oh, I
give her the wave and she just.
I'm so sorry.
She falters under pressure.
I'm Ted Stryker. This is what's happening now.
I like my men like I like my coffee.
Yeah. Strong and black.
Yeah.
And then you get this just wide-eyed look from the kid.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't believe I just saw this. There's a few other moments in there. The girl who always had the internal monologue that starts with a coffee. And people will not get this today. It was a throwback to a very old coffee commercial.
Yes.
Well, he never has two cups.
He never has two cups at home.
Yeah. It's all internal dialogue. And then he had the fish, not making the connection. He never vomits at home.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, sometimes when they go topical, it's, if you don't know, you will not get it.
And that is a bit of a problem with farce, is because they usually play on popular media at the time, and this movie's, Jesus, 30 years old?
Yeah.
37 years 30, old, almost 30, 40 years old.
Almost 40 years old. 36 years old.
Yeah. Whoa. So, you know, a lot of it's going to be dated, and I can just think back, if I went back to watch, like, Hot Shots or even the Naked Guns, there's probably pop. I don't think they did a lot of pop culture stuff into the Naked Gun movies, but so they probably hold up a little bit better.
Yeah.
But Hot Shots definitely would have some dated stuff, and I'm sure if I went back to watch the early scary movies, there'd be some dated stuff now too.
Well, most certainly,
and that's the problem with these things, is they date themselves really quickly.
Yeah, but this one overall, there's a few notes. Like I said, the commercial ones fall flat, but most of it is pretty much the same. And I think it's part of it is because they just do the war. Like, they'll do things where it's referencing something that doesn't really exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was smart. I mean, let's face it, Zaz never intended these to be, especially this one, I'm guessing they didn't plan on being the classic comedy that it is, right? It's this beloved piece of film. But really, they were written as like fluff. Make money at the box office one year and move on to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So and that's why you see the topical references, because they're not expecting them to have
and I think
longevity.
I think they're way better at this than, was it the Wyans who did the Scream and other spoof movies?
Yeah.
They're the ones that are doing it now. I think they're way better at it than the Wyans.
Yeah. Well, like the first Scary Movie, it's good. I think it's just, they took, like you say, the topical stuff. It's more prevalent in the movie, and that's what you, if you don't want longevity in it, that'll be fine.
Mm.
But if you do, you kind of have to really avoid that. Or if you do have it with the Wayans brothers, I think like some of the first Scary Movies, they went with the more iconic ones.
Well, and they
that
made,
you know about.
And they made a driving plot through the film
that
still makes it entertaining.
There's
a hook. It's very obviously an homage to something else and comically so. But, you know, I think after the third one, it just became a solid, steady string of non sequiturs, and it got really lazy.
Yeah.
You can only put, like, a super hodgepodge of stuff into cooking. That's really kind of where it really is. Yeah, if you're making, like, a meat sauce, that's good. But when you're making a film, it's not a good idea.
And you really start to understand the delicate balance of even something like this.
Yeah.
You know, your line is really been crossed a long, long time ago, but there's still a balance you got to maintain. Otherwise, you're just kind of bored at the humor just being incessantly thrown at you. Yeah. You do those dry, deadpan lines with just that little bit of... At the end, twist. That little twist at the end, and it really just fine points the scene and brings you back. I'm like, oh right, I'm in a comedy again.
And I think the thing too is this: it has the through line, it has the story, but I mean, like, there is dramatic tension in it. They are in a plane and they are in trouble.
Yeah.
So as long like there's a structure to it, there's bones to it.
Yes. Yeah. So when the scenes are supposed to be tense and he's coming in for that landing in 0 hour and he's sweating bullets.
Yeah.
And just the exaggeration of that same moment in Airplane, and it's not sweating bullets anymore. He did fucking watering a lawn.
They put a hose up behind his head and just turned it on full.
Yeah. So it's a lot, but...
But it was funny.
Hilarious. But it's funny, and, you know, but it still has the tension of the scene.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and they do like the altitude, his fluctuations in altitude. Mm-hmm. Then they add the little bit about the disco station that gets hit with the antenna.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning of the movie, when this plane's being guided in to its spot by the guys, and then another guy comes in. I don't know what those guys are called with the lights that wave the planes over.
Yeah, I can't remember. They direct the traffic.
That's what they are. They're giant traffic wardens. And a guy comes up asking a question, and the guy with the wands points in the other direction.
He goes, yeah, it's over there.
Yeah. Now, real pilots laugh at that scene, and it's a pretty iconic scene from the movie. It's probably one of the most famous images of the plane coming through the big plate glass window, the nose of the plane. And a lot of pilots have said, you have no idea how close I've ever come to doing that very thing. Like, it's a common thing. And some have said, like, they've even, like, dink, just touched. They've actually come nose to nose with the glass. That's how close they've gotten, come to going through that fucking window, just like in the film. So, I mean, it's something that is pretty realistic to do. And that had to have been expensive because that all looked scale.
Yeah, it was massive.
Yeah, the window might have been composited in, but it looked like it was. But everything else, I mean, that was a big, massive set. It looked like an actual plane.
Trying to remember, I could be wrong. Like I said, I was listening to the commentary, but I don't know if they said they'd seen a scene like that and redid it, or whether they used a scene like that in Airplane.
Yeah.
That scene that had been made, but I'm not sure. But there's something along those lines.
One of those things, like
they wanted to use it.
Everybody's been in an airport. Everybody's seen how close those planes get to those windows.
Yeah. Well, you think about it; like it's absolutely insane to be really precise. Like how much weight this thing has. You need to have enough push to keep it going forward. But when you try and stop,
right?
It's insane.
It's a lot of weight with momentum.
Yes. And you're right. They get really close to those windows.
But yeah, I had to bring up that because it was probably one of the most iconic.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly one of the, in my mind, one of the most iconic images in the movie.
Yeah, that and the...
Because I always remember that from the trailer.
When I was watching this movie, it's like everything about it is iconic. There's very few scenes that you would not recognize immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you were to see like a clip of it on TV or even just a photograph in your Facebook feed, you'd go, that's Airplane. You'd know. Like, you could use literally almost any frame from this movie and people of our generation for sure would know what movie that was.
Sure.
That's how iconic most of these scenes are.
Yeah.
Right? Even the opening sequence there with the clouds and the tail doing the jaws. Parody there.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that one I'm actually going, I forgot about that part, and I started laughing because it was fun, right?
Wait. I had too. Like, I knew most of this movie, but it had been a long, long time. I totally forgot about that opening.
Yeah.
And it was so well done with the tail fin just poking out of the clouds. And that was just fucking painted plywood and cotton.
Yep.
Yeah. And it looked great. It was shaped and it looked great.
Yep. It looked phenomenal and right. And it set you up right from the very open sequence knowing that you are not getting a serious film.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
In case you didn't realize, you're in a comedy right now. Yeah. Be prepared.
Yeah, and it was just in case, but it sets you up so beautifully. Right?
Yeah.
So you know what you're in for right from the get-go.
Commentary, they were worried about it when they were testing it. because you know how it sets out to be a comedy, they cut it a few times because they were worried about it. And what they did in a few of the screenings is they recorded the audience. So whenever there was laughter or something like, or those good sounds, they had it, they were cutting the movie around that.
That makes sense because they're going to give you that sense of timing.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with a bunch of actors who don't do comedy, I mean, you figure their timing's pretty good because you still need timing for drama and everything and certain expressions to get that reaction out of people. But comedy's all about timing, and it's really mm-hmm. difficult if jokes don't time out right, they just fall flat.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, and what made this work with the serious actors is they were supposed to be serious, right?
Yeah.
Like they were delivering funny lines in a serious manner, and that's why it worked, right? Because there's different types of comedy, and there's a comedy where the person saying the line knows it's funny and delivers it well, but and that's where you really need that comedic timing to set up the joke, right? The writers for this film needed to make sure know that the joke worked and rely on the actors just to deliver the line as they wanted it delivered.
Well, what's odd is like this whole movie, you know how there's a lot of movies where there's a straight man just playing off a maniac? There are really no maniacs. They're all straight men.
Except for the one balding guy in the
control room. I didn't get his name, though. The guy who played Johnny.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Johnny.
He was straight up ad-libbing.
Oh, yeah. He's improvising.
Line. His entire catalog of stuff in that movie was entirely improvised.
So he was just told, go nuts, say whatever you want?
Yeah.
That's pretty much what was happening. Because they're like going, that's what he knew how to write for himself. Yeah. And that's pretty much what they were doing. I do like the Tylenol line. It's a big pretty plane with windows and curtains and wheels.
Looks like a flying Tylenol.
And that whole movie, I would get like, yeah, when I'm on a plane, I am in a flying Tylenol.
Every time now, yep.
But yeah, no, it's just, it's amazing how they just, yeah, just a tiny twist makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah. When I think back to the Police Squad TV series, and I always felt the timing didn't quite work on that, but yeah. I'm glad there was just enough there for them to go, hey, let's make a movie and see what happens with Naked Gun, and we got three movies out of it and a short series as well. You never know. I think back another one that I liked as a kid, because Police Squad kind of was a little too early for me, so I didn't quite get the references to the TV show. When Naked Gun came out, I'd seen all those, but I had no idea about the TV show that preceded it. And I think back to another show that I saw called Sledgehammer.
Oh, Sledgehammer.
Yes.
That didn't run very long either. I think they got two short seasons, and that was it. It just didn't find its audience. But that would be another one that they could totally revive. They'd probably have to recast at this point. The guy's probably too old.
Yep.
So good.
Yeah. Make him a captain. Or something like that. If he's
yeah, just to, yeah, just to put him in there. Him if in he's there, still yeah. around, I guess. I don't know if he is.
But. Yeah, I saw him. I saw the actor who played Sledgehammer in something not that long ago. He's still acting.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah.
He is older. Much older. I mean, considering that was like early 90s.
Yeah, right. That was perfect. But yeah, that's the whole thing, that spoofing. It's either... It's weird. It's such a fine, fine line. If you go too far, it seems stupid. But if you go not far enough, it's not funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what, I mean, Zaz, the Zucker brothers, they clearly, Kentucky Fried Movie was sort of their first a real attempt out of the gate, and it didn't quite have it right.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie is where they hit all the right
notes. They figured it out.
Yeah, they figured it out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they continued to sort of grow that with the Naked Gun movies. Yeah. And
I think the things that the studio changed on their intent really work for the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making it a 707 instead of a prop plane and giving it a bigger cast as a result and giving you more opportunities to do things. Like if you only had a small passenger plane, that scene with the lady getting slapped in the long wagon train of people with weapons ready to brutalize her would have been near as funny.
And it was so much funnier when you've got the reference. Did you, like,
oh, God, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it was always a really funny moment for me in that movie, but when it comes around at 0 hour and the stewardess actually slaps her and then the doctor, I think it was the doctor.
No, it was her boyfriend.
No, it was her fiance, yeah.
Fiance says, no, you got to deal with these other passengers. I'll calm her down. Uh-huh. And I was like, and next? And next?
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of the going into Zero Hour for the first time. I'm like, oh, I wish I had never seen Airplane, because it's tainted what I've seen of this movie so much. And I'm not sure how much I was reacting to the memory of Airplane as opposed to that scene. I still think it's a funny, ridiculous scene in Zero Hour.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It is very silly.
Oh, speaking of funny, ridiculous scenes that I wish I kept verbatim in Airplane was the scene where she hands the Scottish football fan the Dramamine so that he would vomit up the fish.
Yeah.
And right. He's like, what's the line? He says, first you feed me, then you ask for it back.
Yeah.
That was a legitimately funny line. And it should have been in Airplane. It should have been.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that bit.
Yeah.
Because he was the comic relief of that movie.
He really was. The Jive Talkers were obviously intended to replace him, right?
I think so. Ooh. Yeah.
Fun fact: when they released this in Germany, what they did is they were wondering, because that joke about the Jive Talk actually really translated well, and they couldn't figure it out. And they asked somebody, like, what they did was they dubbed the black guys as Bavarian, which is a very southern German dialect, and that's when the comedy translated completely for Germans.
I was if you go through the IMDb factoids, there's very similar stories for different regions around the world. There's just a wagon train of them, of these sub-dialects within these countries, and I'm like, it just plays over and over and over again.
Yeah. Every country has
it. Now, when they wrote that scene, version. Zaz just didn't understand Jive talking and just let those guys go. And you could tell, like, when the Leave It to Beaver mom does the Jive Talk, I don't need the subtitles. I actually totally understand what she's saying. When those guys are going, no fucking clue.
None whatsoever. You'll catch, like, one part of a phrase and go, okay, I got that.
I watched it with subtitles, and, like, that really does help. And you're like, oh.
Well, they subtitle the main portions, but...
No. But I mean, like, they subtitle what they actually are saying underneath what the translation is.
Oh,
so... Like, I saw both versions. Okay. What was coming out of their mouths versus what... So the strict
translations.
Yeah.
Okay. How did they match up? Not well?
If you read it, you could kind of get the feeling of what... Because, like, so-and-so was like, Jews, he can't hang. And it's like, my friend is feeling very ill. So it if you can read both at the same time, I tell you, you can kind of tell.
I get the feeling they just, like, say it something that sounds like this, and we'll dub it in, subtitle it in later, regardless of how close it is.
No, it was real words. It was it was interesting, like a few, like some subtle like slang, but
yeah, I don't know if anybody can speak Jive now.
No,
people would be in their 70s now.
I don't know. People, there's dialects, but, like, now people speak in memes and lols and...
And was it called Ebonics?
Yeah. Well, there's a... Was it Brooklyn Nine-Nine where Gina's talking about, like, I feel like sad face emoji.
And I mean, it just comes down to emojis. The fact that language changes all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Jive didn't go away. It just evolved into something else.
Other slang. Yeah. Like, you'd have different...
Even hashtags have made it into people's speech.
Yeah. So,
it usually is a joke, but...
That's the difference. Yeah, there's all kinds of variations.
I only understand one version of English, thank you very much.
And barely that.
Anybody who's listening to this podcast knows that's true.
I don't know. When you're talking about the variations of English, go to Glasgow, go drinking with some Scottish people. First round of beer, you'll be fine. Second round of beer, you'll lose a lot. Third round of beer, you won't know a damn thing they're saying.
Now, we should talk,
and it's English.
We should talk about one of the most important stars of this movie. We haven't talked about him enough. Otto makes his debut once all the pilots are down, and my God, it's so funny when the pilots have to be dragged out of the cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
And to your right are the Rocky Mountains. And to your right or your left, you should be able to see the string of the Rocky Mountains. And while everybody's looking out their windows, they drag the pilots down the hallway. between the aisles. It's so funny.
Because in the first one, the co-pilot just goes away and they don't tell you where they dragged him to. And yeah. then in the pilot himself, they just kind of put him in the back of the cockpit.
There's probably a pile of pilots.
Just to hide him.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he tried to make the pilot in the originals like very heroic, right? He's just, can you give me something so I can make it through and all that stuff, right? I mean, he looked like your heroic pilot, right? I mean, beautiful man, blonde and chisel jawed, and
he's got bum chin.
Yeah, he does have a bum chin.
He does.
But yeah, so I love the fact that they sort of played him up as heroic, whereas with in the remake, I love how they're listing the symptoms. He's like scratching himself, and and it's like, and then also he just slumps over. I think that was actually a really great way to sort of counterpoint the heroism of the original character versus the slightly sick and twisted character.
Because in the original one, what he actually says is like, "I just remembered something. I had the fish." Yeah. And it's like, it's supposed to be dramatic, but I laughed out loud.
I laughed my ass off. She's been saying this whole time, the fish is making people sick. Just as the doctor's walking out, I just remembered I had the fish. You're waiting right now? You just remembered you had the fish? You didn't notice that?
You should be noticing lots of stuff. You are flying a plane.
It makes you wonder, like, especially the way Airplane did it, like, well, maybe he wouldn't have gotten sick. Maybe it was psychosomatic that brought it on.
Yeah.
Yes.
The doctor says it may not affect some people. Yeah.
So Elaine, long before Ted is brought into the cockpit, pulls the autopilot. And the autopilot's this inflatable man. And she's radioing back to the tower of what's going on, and then he starts to deflate and they say about the nozzle.
There's a nozzle underneath his belt.
Yeah.
Blow on it.
So yeah, the doctor comes in to check what's going on. Looks like she's given the autopilot a blowjob. But the best part is they're both having this most satisfactory smoke afterwards.
Yes. Well, there's two things.
What did she get out of it that she was so happy?
It doesn't look like she's giving the pilot a blowjob. She is literally giving him a blowjob. If you're looking at the very literal term, it was a blowjob.
It was. That was her job. She got paid to blow it
up. But yeah, the satisfying cigarette, I'm like, that's fine, but really?
I think it's funny. We thought it was funny when the doctor walks in and sees what's going on and then just like quietly steps back. Yeah. Walking in on your roommate or something like that, right?
Yeah. Although when the plane was slouching, was he like delivering a baby or something? Doing surgery?
No, with the lady in the back with the feet up?
Yeah.
No, that's, he's taking out speculum. That's a gynecological exam.
Yeah, but why?
They all
have food poisoning.
Yeah. That's the joke.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, while I'm here.
Just has a speculum on him.
And a gynecology table, and stirrups,
wild things.
That's a fully equipped plane.
The wild things you do on vacation,
like mile high gynecological exam.
Screw the Mile High Club. Lots of people in that club. Yeah, but did you get your gynecological exam?
I really need somebody to scrape my cervix really high in the air.
That's a much smaller list.
It might be a list of one.
That poor woman in this movie.
Well, I remember with Otto, after he's released from the chair, Ted and Elaine.
He's trying to control the plane.
Well, yeah, but he wants the one last grope on Elaine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Ends up with another boob joke.
Yeah. There's a few boob jokes. The bouncing jello. Yeah.
Oh, the bouncing jello.
Boobs.
And there's a pair of naked boobs when all hell breaks loose on the plane. A naked woman goes past.
You're allowed one in a PG movie.
Yeah.
And Zucker Brothers use everything they're allowed.
Well, actually, one more thing with Otto. You will notice there's at one point where Ted's like, I can't do this. And he gets up and they're shaking the camera like the plane's shaking. And all he does is he grabs Otto, puts him in the seat, and then everything calms right down.
And then, of course, at the end of the movie, Otto flies the wreckage away. Somehow.
Yeah, he can actually take off a plane with no gear.
Yeah, no wheels. Like, it's not going to hit that appropriate speed to get
up. They would have been fine if they just left Otto on there.
Yeah.
And there would have been no problem. It would have been a much more boring movie.
He could have landed the plane, apparently.
Yes, he could have.
There's one thing I missed that I actually really enjoyed about the original that I wish they had included in Airplane. The scene right before he lands, and they're saying, no, you have to circle around. Right. Mm-hmm. And Ted's just like, no, I'm coming in whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Right. I love that bit. I would have really liked to see that scene, Ted do that in Airplane. Right. Where he's
really assertive.
Gets really assertive.
Well,
yeah.
No, didn't he do that?
Yeah. But I wanted to see the dialogue from.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't completely the dialogue. But yeah. They do have the bit. I think both of them say, I may bend your plane, but I'll get it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, oh, it's so good. And they do keep that's the lousiest landing I've ever, ever had.
Oh, but it's great. I mean, it translates so well into both. And Trevelyan's like maybe the lousiest landing in the history of this airport, but I, for one, would like to shake your hand.
And buy you a drink,
And buy you a drink. And that whole line translates over to Robert Stack. But then it just keeps going on and on and on. Everybody's left the cockpit at this point, but he's going on and on.
See, I love that Christmas. Christmas for me was terrible, Ted. It's just a nightmare. Have you ever been kicked in the head by an iron boot? No, that's a stupid question. Forget about that. Like, you just feel that he just wants to talk to somebody.
I'm like, man, this guy's got some issues. But I get it. His wife was sleeping with a horse.
No, that was the pilot's wife.
That was
the pilot's wife. That's right. It was the pilot's wife.
The pilot's wife who, when he's trying to talk to Stryker, starts rubbing his chest.
Yeah.
Robert just starts really just massaging his
That was Captain Over's
pecs.
Wife.
Yeah, so many odd things. Like, I'm sure that the horse was sort of like this sort of weird homage to the Godfather.
I thought so too until it moved.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she's like, you can go out the back and there's juice in the fridge. And I'm like, why would a horse need juice? I know that's not the weirdest part of that scene.
Electrolytes after sex. Come on, electrolytes after sex. Everybody knows that.
But it's funny, if you go onto YouTube and watch the comparisons between those two scenes is kind of funny.
Yeah, and there are some. There's at least one YouTube video out there where they do a comparison. The comparison, right?
Well, that's the one clip I ran there. I didn't want to run a whole bunch of them, but because we were going to talk about a bunch of them. But I ran the one I liked the best.
Yeah, I know. It's quite cool. Like, it's just it's so interesting. And I think some of the stuff was mirrored because they're going different directions. Like, I think Ted's on a different side of the aisle where he's sitting in Airplane versus where he's sitting in Zero Hour, but I don't know if that was because of the version I watched, but it seemed mirrored.
Originally he was sitting on the opposite side of the plane, but then he moved over and he was trying to sit with his wife, right?
Yeah.
But this is a good example of what we try to do when we go do things like Trollope of Terror, which was episodes, I can't remember, we just posted
a couple ago,
a little while ago. But I mean, we go back to these 50s movies and these unknown yet beloved 50s movies and 60s movies. This is exactly what we're trying to do, right?
Episode 90, by the way.
Oh, it was 90. Okay that's nice. What I thought, But yeah, I don't think we've ever gone quite so comedic, except for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yep. Right? Yeah, but what can you do?
Yeah.
That was me.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, so I mean, this is just a great example of how it can be done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe our listeners have an idea of another older film, an older forgotten film like this one. If you got any suggestions for ones that might make a really good kind of over-the-top spoof like this,
for sure,
you can let us know. You can let us know at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook. Go ahead and like our page, and you can be kept up to date on all the new episodes, or invasionoftheremake@gmail.com.
Yes. Talk to us.
Yeah, talk to us. Yeah. And if you got suggestions, we might make that a future episode. And then
for sure,
Trish can exercise that comedic talents and
do my
best and really bastardize it.
Yeah. But then I need your guys' help for like the script writing.
That's right.
There's jokes I don't often see.
So let us know what might be ripe for that kind of comedic send off.
There's
apparently Baywatch was not among them.
No.
Just tanking right now.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I think not surprising.
Everybody's done.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody really wanted it back.
No, I don't think that property is as beloved as people seem to think it is.
Yeah.
Especially not now, and I just don't know. It's a product of its time.
It's very much a product of its time. And it's just past that right now. We're not in a place where it's still relevant.
Nope.
I mean, that series would have been great to go this far with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think they did in the movie, but I haven't seen it, so I couldn't say.
I have no opinion on the matter as of yet. I mean, it's The Rock, or so Dwayne Johnson, doesn't miss very often, but when he misses, he does miss big.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they just, they take a huge chance. And I think probably Baywatch already spoofed itself in Baywatch Nights. That was insane.
Yeah, that was insane.
If you want to see a special kind of nuts, watch one of the latter episodes of that TV series and you'll be like, what? It's insane.
Yeah, because, after you've done lifeguarding, you have a night job of being a private investigator.
Yeah, which eventually morphs into some sort of X-Files-ish, weird supernatural crap.
Oh, it was just insane, that show. I only got to see a couple, but they were batshit.
I can honestly say I have never seen an episode of either.
Oh, you're missing out. If nothing else, boobies.
No, what was that I watched? No, actually, if nothing else, watch some older episodes of Baywatch to watch actors we know now as child actors. That is the only good part of watching Baywatch. You're like, oh.
Yeah, that's not enticing enough, but thank you for suggesting it.
Well, then watch their scenes and then...
There we go.
Another way you guys can support the show, like, share, and subscribe. You don't want to miss a post. You don't want to miss an episode. It's just hit that subscribe button. Mm-hmm. YouTube, iTunes, and all those other places you find us, hit that subscribe button. But when we also make a post about a new episode, and we certainly appreciate it with your likes and thumbs ups and all that, but share it out on your wall on Twitter and Facebook as well. That gets a lot more eyeballs on the show.
Earballs.
I'm so sorry. That was your line.
Well, I've been tanking this whole episode, so it's I keep missing the lines I should know.
Earballs. And you can also leave us a review on iTunes. That also helps people find the show. Leave us a review and a 5-star rating. The more ratings and the more stars, the more people that get to help find the show. So... Yeah. Just take a couple minutes out of your time. I mean, those stars take no time. But also, just write a few lines about how you're digging the show. And, those kind of comments also help us inform us of what you guys want as well. So please do us that solid. You can also tell people where to find the show. You're already listening to us. But if you have a friend who might not have iTunes... we're on a ton of different platforms. I'm just going to list a few of them. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Audio Boom, Blueberry, and, of course, the Apple Podcast app, and even YouTube. So we're in all those places and a ton more. We're probably on the podcast app that you most like to listen to. So grab your friend's phone, find it for them, subscribe them. And they're off to the races with all our movie goodness free to you every single week, advertising free for now.
Hopefully, if you guys, help us build ourselves up,
That's right. And you never know. New things can happen. So,
absolutely. New things. New things are good.
New things are good.
Yeah. Hit the subscribe autopilot.
Hit the autopilot and you will always have that delicious new episode every Tuesday evening.
Exactly.
Or Wednesday, depending on what part of the world, wherever you are, whenever I post it. It's once a week. It'll happen. You'll get it. It's awesome.
We're here for you guys.
That's right.
We're here to talk you down.
Well, that's it. I guess I picked the wrong week to... I got nothing after bath salts. I started too big.
Sort of way too big.
I started way too big. Because I had to go bigger than the movie. Yeah.
You picked the wrong week to quit killing hobos?
Yes. Yes, I have.
I will go farther if you need farther.
That is further. That is definitely further. I'm terrified of you.
We already knew this, Jay. I've determined that Trish has a very, 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 very... very dark side that scares me sometimes. Yes.
I would never do anything to you two. You're all safe.
The rest of you watch your backs.
But hey, if you subscribe and give us a 5-star review, your safety level rockets immensely.
All right. Well,
I didn't mean to threaten our fan base. I do love you all. I do love you all.
It's not that large. Show them the love, Trish.
I do love you all.
Don't scare the few we have.
I love being in your ear. I would never harm you.
Well, oh, that, I just went a dark place on that one.
All right. Well, Trish likes to be in your earballs. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I am still Trish. I really do love you.
We are out of here.
How soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me. I'm a doctor.
No, I mean, I'm just not sure.
Or can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
No. I mean, we can't land for another 2 hours. Fog has closed down everything this side of the mountains. We've got to get through to Chicago.